Next case is 04-1466 MP Star Financial, Inc. versus Cleveland State University. Mr. Cuppage, excuse me.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is David Cuppage. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
What's your time then?
Your Honor, we have asserted two propositions of law in this case, but I think the issue can essentially be boiled down to one issue. That issue is whether the governmental exclusion provisions found at 1309.109D14 excludes the transfer or assignment by an assignor of an account when the government is an account debtor. We would submit to this court that the governmental exclusion provision found in the Uniform Commercial Code, Chapter 1309, cannot be read so broadly. This court should interpret RC 1309.109D14 consistent with 1309.406F. This court should also treat or interpret the governmental exclusion provision consistent with case law from other jurisdictions and consistent with the official comments to the Uniform Commercial Code. In doing this,
you're arguing a broad versus a narrow interpretation. You're arguing for a narrow interpretation. We have some pretty plain language. I mean, it doesn't require broad or narrow interpretation. It just simply says all transfers by a government, state, or governmental unit. It doesn't say where the government's just a borrower. I mean, it doesn't have any of that language that you want us to read into it. So isn't your argument really one that you should be addressing to the General Assembly to redefine that phrase? I mean, you're asking us to actually rewrite the language, in essence, and add words into it that aren't there.
Your Honor, I think what we're when you interpret 1309.109D14 and review it in a broader context, review it in the entirety of Chapter 1309, I think the only conclusion that can be reached is that a transfer refers to a transfer of a security interest by a governmental agency or unit, not a transfer or a payment or some other transfer that might be given by a governmental unit. The reason I say that, Your Honor, is because I don't believe you can interpret 1309.109D14 consistent with 1309.406F. I think there's a conflict there if 1309.109D is interpreted as broadly as the trial court and the Court of Appeals has interpreted it.
But the language in the UCC Article 9 is actually different than the language that the legislature adopted, is it not?
I'm sorry, can you?
The language in Article 9 is different from the language the legislature adopted. The language of all transfers by government, state, and governmental unit does not appear in the UCC version.
So it appears in an older version of the Uniform Commercial Code, the 1972 version, which was at, I believe it was 9109E.
Right, but their newest version got rid of it, and Ohio legislature did not.
That is correct, Your Honor. But
so again, we would be judicially changing language that the legislature has not chosen to change when they are well aware that the UCC changed it.
I think what we're asking this court to do is to interpret it consistent with other jurisdictions and consistent with 1309.406F, because that section was also changed in the 2001 revisions. Prior to the 2001 revisions, the exclusion that I'm referencing here, I'm sorry, the provision in the revised code which prohibited contract terms which prohibited assignments and transfers of accounts receivable, it wasn't as broad as the current provision which the General Assembly adopted in 2001. Previously, I think it was found in, if I'm recalling correctly, it was found at Chapter 13. Bear with me a second. It was much narrower of an exclusion. When the General Assembly in 2001 adopted 1309.406F, it included the provision that I'm relying on. I relied on in the Court of Appeals and at the Common Pleas Court level, and that was the provision which essentially provided that a governmental unit such as Cleveland State University could not prohibit or restrict the assignment or transfer of an account. Previously, that language was not as broad as it is currently found in the revised code. So yes, the 2001 revisions to the Uniform Commercial Code retained the provision that I believe is vague and ambiguous, and it inserted a more specific provision at 406F, which specifically prohibits a governmental unit from restricting or prohibiting the transfer or assignment of an account. I don't believe you can interpret 1309.109D14 as broadly and then give effect to 1309.406F. They're inconsistent. I think the General Assembly has specifically revised amended the revised code to cover the situation that we have before this court today. And in doing so, in interpreting the revised code as narrowly as the Court of Appeals and the Common Pleas Court interpreted it, it in fact ignored, I think, another important provision of the revised code, and that's the provision which states that the policies and procedures of the Uniform Commercial Code, of Ohio's adoption of the Uniform Commercial Code, is to make Ohio's UCC consistent with other jurisdictions. And when you review the case law from other jurisdictions, no court in anywhere in the United States that I'm aware of has interpreted the governmental exclusion provision that is before this court as broadly as the Court of Appeals and the Common Pleas Court has.
Counsel, question on this record, and I may have missed something, but Cleveland State University had notice of the assignment, and it appeared that at some point when they got notice of this assignment, they appropriately sent their payments to the assignee and then reverted to paying directly again. What was the reason for that? Is that in the record?
It's not in the record, Your Honor. I could go outside of the record and I can tell you, and it's my understanding that the Metro Temps went to Cleveland State without my client's authority or knowledge and directed that the payments be made directly to the Asinore Metro Temps Metro Minority, and that Cleveland State ignored the instructions, the joint instructions that had previously been given. And the instructions are attached to the complaint. They are for this court to review. And the instructions do say that only MP Star Financial could modify in writing the instructions that were given. And those instructions were also signed by representatives of Metro Minority and Metro Temps. So there's no question about it. The accounts that are in dispute today have never been paid to MP Star Financial, not by the account debtor, Cleveland State University, or the Asinore. Your Honor, this case is also, I think, specifically on point with two cases which are outside of this court's, which are outside of the state of Ohio. American Bank of Commerce versus City of McAllister represents and provides basically the same set of facts as are before this court. In fact, in that case, the city had a contract with a general contractor, and the city's contract specifically provided a non-assignment provision in the contract. The Oklahoma Supreme Court, interpreting a former version of the Uniform Commercial Code, which has been and specifically interpreting 9-3184, which was very similar to 1309.37, which this court interpreted in the First Bank of Marietta decision. That court found in the American Bank of Commerce case that payments made by the city directly to the general contractor, which had assigned those accounts to the financing company, violated the assignment and subjected the city to the risk of double payment. The court.
Is Metro Temp still a viable entity, or are they out of business?
They're out of business, Your Honor. This case is also similar, very similar to the GMAC case versus the Clifton Fine Central School District, where, again, payments made by a governmental entity to the assignor of the accounts receivable violate the assignment and expose the city to the risk of double payment. there are other cases which we have cited in our brief which have adopted the Uniform Commercial Code's official comments, which basically state that the governmental exclusion provision applies only when the government is a borrower, not when the government is acting in a private capacity. In essence, here, Cleveland State was contracting for services. It was going into the open market, and it was providing and obtaining services from Metro Minority, Metro Temps, which provided the employment consulting services and the employment leasing services that it provided. Metro Temps sold and assigned the Cleveland State University invoices to MP Star Financial, received value for those invoices. Notice was given, and Cleveland State on occasion made payments directly as instructed, but on the invoices that we've referenced in our complaint, made payments directly to the assignor in violation of the assignment. Your Honor, in closing, the courts below never addressed the policy that the Ohio General Assembly has set forth in the statute, and that is to make the Ohio's adoption of the Uniform Commercial Code consistent with other jurisdictions. It never addressed the what I believe is the inconsistent interpretation of 1309.406F, and it is in fact created an inconsistency between 1309.109D14 and 1309.406F. The only way that this court can clarify and give effect to 1309.406F is to find that the governmental exclusion provision applies only when the government is a debtor or a borrower. Unless this court has any additional comments or questions, I'll simply reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Cuppage.
Thank you.
Mr. Cole.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Douglas Cole on behalf of Attorney General Jim Petro, representing Cleveland State University. With the court's permission, I'd like to start with Justice Stratton's point. MP Star is basically asking this court to impose by judicial fiat a rule that the General Assembly expressly declined to adopt. In 2001, the General Assembly had before it the revised Article 9, which included, among some 300 pages of text, a provision that would have led to the result that MP Star seeks here. The General Assembly adopted virtually the entire revised Article 9, but did not adopt that provision. MP Star now seeks through a judicial interpretation something that was not accomplished through legislative action.
But then how do we reconcile 406F? Because 406F says you can't prohibit these assignments, but yet if we take the broad interpretation, you can't prohibit these assignments, but if you ignore them, there's no consequence.
Well, 406F first of all, we believe that 406F actually supports our interpretation rather than theirs, because 406F's language talks about transfers of security interests. It says expressly in the statute, transfer of security interest. If transfer, as the other side suggests, is limited to security interests, it would be wholly redundant to say transfer of a security interest. Transfer in and of itself would already mean transfer of a security interest. That's what they're arguing. That isn't what the General Assembly said. Transfer is a broad word. It needs to be, in a given context, constrained, so we can talk about a transfer of a security interest. Other parts of the statute talk about transfers of claims in insurance proceeds. Other parts of the statute talk about transfer of interest in property or transfer of funds. That's expressly in 1309.332.
So your argument is F is strictly restricted to a security interest?
The rule in F is not a rule simply directed at governmental entities. The rule in F is designed to ensure that or promote the notion that security, that interests in various things, security interests should be freely transferable. And it says that even as among private parties, you can't have a rule that somehow limits the transfer of the security interest based on approval by some governmental body. Or by the account debtor, it goes on to say. It's essentially what they're saying is we generally want free alienability of the things that are covered by this chapter. But then that we have to go back to what's covered by this chapter, and we go back to the section that's called scope, which is the section we're dealing with here, and that says the scope of this chapter does not extend to transfers by governmental entities.
But why should the governmental entity be allowed to ignore a proper assignment?
You know, Your Honor, I guess because the state has sovereign immunity, except to the extent that the General Assembly has waived it, there's no doubt, and it needs to be clear, there's no doubt that Cleveland State paid in full. It paid the amount of the account receivable. It paid, in some cases, MP Star, it paid in some cases Metro Temps, but it is paid in full. So they're trying, MP Star is now trying to force the state to pay twice for the services that it received. It can do so to the extent that the General Assembly has waived the state's sovereign immunity.
Counsel, let me challenge you on that. I thought the state constitutionally didn't have sovereign immunity. The Constitution expressly says that, but says that the General Assembly shall pass laws indicating how one collects from the state.
Isn't
that the... So the state really doesn't have sovereign immunity. It just is...
Your Honor, I think that might be an interesting question under a different set of facts if the state hadn't paid for the services it had received. Here, there's no dispute that the state paid for the services it received.
I'm challenging your broad-brush constitutional statement. I mean, local governments, that's a different question. But the state, I thought the Constitution expressly says, does not have sovereign immunity. And it's just a question, and then it says the General Assembly shall enact laws setting up the procedure on how one collects. And the Court of Claims is now how that happens. It used to be a special bill from the legislature every time one needed to had a wrong thrust upon it by the state.
But, Your Honor, there's certainly no suggestion that the state has to be subject to exactly the same rules that would apply to a private entity. That is...
Okay, you can make that argument. I just don't want to leave you get away with the bold-faced statement that the state has sovereign immunity, because I don't think that's constitutionally correct.
Well, the state has immunity except, subject to the rules that the General Assembly puts forth. And the General Assembly here has put forth a rule that says... In essence, these special rules that apply to secured transactions are not going to apply to the states. If you've got your normal contract claim against the state, go to the Court of Claims and make your contract claim against the state.
Now, let me bring you down to this case. Why wouldn't estoppel dispose of this favorably to the other party? In other words, Cleveland State knew the deal. It was presented to them, this joint agreement. They went along with it. And then, without notice to the person who had extended the credit, presumably, these temp services, they're expensive. It's a big cash flow problem. That is, your employees have to get paid in a timely fashion, and the people using the services don't necessarily pay the employment service. So there's a float problem, and presumably this company covered the float problem, presented to Cleveland State this joint agreement, and Cleveland State went along with it and mailed the payments to the designated post office box. And then all of a sudden, without notice, so the company extending, covering the float so that these employees who are actually doing the work can get a paycheck without any notice, those checks stop coming to that post office box.
Well, Your Honor,
why shouldn't Cleveland State, once they went along with it, be a stop from claiming now we've got no obligation?
Well, Your Honor, answering that question is going to require going outside the factual record because of the posture in which this case comes up, it's on a motion to dismiss on the legal question of whether or not the D14 exclusion.
Well, we left opposing counsel do that, so I think you've got a free shot on goal on that.
Your Honor,
issue.
I think it's fair to say that after making payments to MP Star, some confusion developed regarding who the payments should go to. Metro Temps came to Cleveland State University, asked that the payments be redirected towards Cleveland State University, said there'd been renegotiations of the surety agreement. I think at one point Cleveland State University actually offered to make a check jointly payable to both so that they would both have to sign off on it and they'd have to work it out as between themselves. MP Star declined that offer of a check jointly made payable to both. And Cleveland State took the step of directing the payments to Metro Temps, Metro Temps, in good faith. It thought that's the that's who should be receiving the payment.
So your understanding of the facts outside the record is that MP Star knew that Cleveland State was shifting its position on payment.
I think it's fair to say that. This Cleveland State made an offer to jointly pay them both, and that offer was rejected by, I believe, MP Star. And that's that confusion. If they wouldn't take that check, so a check had to be made out to someone, and Cleveland State, in good faith, made the decision to pay Metro Temps rather than MP Star. But the legal question, again, I mean, I think an interesting factual backdrop, but the legal question, and one that, in a sense, sort of precedes this whole inquiry into the specific facts of this case is this a transfer by the government? And when we look at the way in which transfer is used throughout Section 1309, it's clear that transfer is a very broad word. And I do want to clear up, in the reply brief, MP Star suggests that we're trying to say that transfer is synonymous with payment. No, not at all. Transfer is a much broader term. It includes payments of money. It includes all kinds of other transfers, all kinds of other ways of disposing of assets. And if we look to Black's Law Dictionary, I mean, this court has got a rule that says undefined terms, and transfer is an undefined term in this statute, get their common everyday meaning absent compelling reasons to the contrary. And the court has said quite plainly that the reasons need to be awfully compelling if you're going to adopt a meaning that's not the ordinary common everyday meaning. Well, the common everyday meaning of transfer, if you look at Black's Law Dictionary, addresses this precise point. It says transfers includes payments of money. So Black's, the official lexicon, the official interpreter of legal lexicon says transfer includes payment of money. Webster's and other dictionaries have even a broader definition of the term transfer. So if we're looking at the common everyday meaning, the payment of money here is clearly a transfer. If we look at the statutory text from other sections, it confirms that broad meaning, because when the General Assembly says, oh, I want to use transfer of something narrower here, they always add the something narrower. And I would direct the court to 1309.206, where they talk about transfers of securities or other financial assets, or 1309.332, where they're talking about transferees of money and transferees of funds, or 1309.401, where they're talking about transfers of rights and collateral, or 1309.406F, as the other side asks us to look to, where they talk about transfers of security interests. But when they want to qualify the word transfer and narrow it in some way, they add the additional text. In the provision at issue here, all we have is the word transfer with none of that qualifying language. MP Star would like this court to add that qualifying language. I'm sure it wanted the General Assembly to adopt that provision in the revised Article 9 in 2001 when the General Assembly considered doing so. But the General Assembly didn't do so, and if MP Star wants text added to the statute, they should take that request to the General Assembly, who can decide, again, whether or not to adopt the rule that MP Star wants for this case.
Counsel, would you dispute your opponent's statement that this is the only case, if we accept your position, this would be the only case in the country that would take this view of this particular section?
Well, it'll be the fourth case in Ohio, Your Honor, that in both courts below, the Court of Claims and another case in Ohio involving this section, have all uniformly come to this conclusion. So this would be, if the court went the way MP Starr suggests, it would be a break with precedent in Ohio, if you will. I mean, these courts. With respect to courts from other jurisdictions, I note that the other MP Starr relies heavily on American Bank of Commerce for City of McAllister and the Clifton Fine Central School District case that my opposing counsel spoke about this morning. Interestingly, if you read those cases, neither one of them talks about the governmental transfer exclusion. The language that we're asking the court to interpret isn't interpreted in either of those cases. To be sure, the courts in those cases applied Section 9 or Article 9 in cases involving the government, but it's not even clear that anyone argued that this prohibition should apply. And when we look at some of the other cases, for instance, the Alaska case that they cite, the Alaska case is interpreting a statute that limits the governmental transfer exclusion to cases in which the government has created or transferred a security interest. Or I guess it's an interest. Security interest has been created by or on behalf of a governmental entity. Well, of course, that's a narrower exclusion than the exclusion we're dealing with here. So when you go through these, parse through them, I think at the end of the day there are about three bankruptcy cases from courts in three different jurisdictions that appear to adopt the interpretation the other side is requesting. Interestingly, in none of those cases were they using the Article 9 to get a second payment from a government. It was always, I think those were all stakeholder cases where the question was governments holding certain funds into which party should it go, which raised different questions, and I don't want to get back into the sovereign immunity constitutional morass, but raised slightly different questions than, you know, can you force a state to pay twice for the services it's received? So I'm not sure that there's much going their way, frankly, and certainly not a uniform national approach to what this means. I mean, frankly, this issue appears to have come up about 9 times in the last 30 years. It's not clear it's a hotly litigated issue, which kind of undercuts their notion that, boy, having the rule that says governments aren't subject to this or the government transfer exclusion is broadly applied is going to undermine credit markets. I mean, it's an issue that's been litigated 9 times and not even this particular provision. So,
Mr. Cole, I know you don't want to go back there, but I want to read you Article 1, Section 16 of the Ohio Constitution, redress in the courts. All courts shall be open for every person for any injury done in his land, goods, person, or reputation, and shall have a remedy in due course of law, and shall have justice administered without denial or delay. Suits against the state. Suits may be brought against the state in such courts and in such manner as may be provided by law. Hence the Court of Claims. That's really not a statement of sovereign immunity. It's a statement that the General Assembly will provide where the state may be sued. And they've done that.
They have done that, and possibly with respect to common law claims, their ability to limit the state's liability or extinguish the state's liability arguably might be compromised by that constitutional language. But when we're dealing here with a statutorily created right of action, that is, there's no question that under common law contract principles, MP Starr would have no claim against the state. The state discharged its obligation by paying Metro Thames. So the question is, does this statutory right that admittedly would exist against a private party, if Cleveland State were a private party, well, admittedly might be a stretch. We have to look further at the allegations and the complaint.
You need to sum up, Mr. Cole.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Cubbage, you've saved about 3.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honors. A question was raised earlier about whether we would give consequence or effect to 1309.406D, and I think the answer to that is no. And as this court knows, the UCC remedy provisions are to be liberally construed. I disagree with the state's interpretation of 406F when they say state or suggest that it assists their case. I believe 406F clearly prohibits the restriction of an assignment, not just the restriction or transfer of a security interest. It also prohibits the restriction of a transfer or of assignment of an account. 1309.37D was the contract provision. That's carried over to 1309.406D now, and the new provision that was added in 2001 is 1309.406F. We went outside the record, I'll acknowledge that, and I would just want to add that there, we certainly dispute that there was an offer that a joint check be issued between MP Star and MME. Hopefully we'll have the opportunity to litigate that at the court below. But I would point out that the record does state, and the notification provisions which are attached to the complaint, which are taken as true, simply provide that the notification is effective. The instructions can only be altered in writing by MP Star Financial. And I would submit that 1309.406F provides a compelling reason to narrow and to interpret 1309.109D14 as narrow as the other courts that have interpreted the decision, or have interpreted that particular statute, have done so. Also, 1301.02B, which requires uniformity, and 1301.06A, which requires the liberal administration of remedies, provides a compelling reason to interpret 1309.104D14 as narrow as we submit that other jurisdictions have interpreted. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cuppage. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.